Hi, my name is Natalie Gochner. This is Both Sides of the Aisle. I'm excited to be in the studio today with my friend Shireen Gorbani on the left.
Hey, Natalie. And hi, listeners. Thanks for tuning in.
John Dougal on the right.
Hey, good to be with you. I think we're going to call this the studio warming edition.
It's hot.
AC has been broken in studio, and it's a little toasty today.
It's hot. And it's hot out in public affairs, in public dialogue. And we're going to go right. We had a full list of things to talk about today. The debate. I want to hear what you two thought about the Republican debate.
Which debate?
You know, I
the GOP watched, presidential
I
debate.
Watched the whole thing, and I found it fascinating. And Nikki Haley was the clear winner to me. So
Wow. Let's
hear what you all see or read or thought.
I thought it sounded like a traditional Republican debate. I mean, the good and bad that comes with that and stuff. So it was an interesting dynamic. I want to hear what Shireen says first.
Oh, I see. Okay, I was going to let you go. It's your party. So what I'm going to say is I think the winner of this debate was Joe Biden. I think when you look at some of the conversations that were happening, I feel like it's a move further right, further extreme. Frankly, Nikki Haley did stand out.
Is he the donkey that wasn't in the room?
Including the one that wasn't in the room. But, you know, many people are saying this is Ramaswamy's breakout. Ramaswamy is further right than Ron DeSantis, has some really concerning and troubling views about foreign policy, deeply, I think, out of his depth on many of those issues. I did think Nikki Haley was sort of the only person to me that presented a bit of a more centrist.
Yeah, balanced.
More balanced and frankly, much more experienced. But I don't think she's got legs in this race at all. I don't really see that she's got
movement. I know that she's down in like that 6% range or
something. Yeah, that's right. So
John, who was your winner?
Who
did you like and who was the winner?
Well, who do I think were the winners? Let me touch on that first. I do think Nikki Haley was one of the winners coming out of this.
She's skilled and has depth.
Yep. And I think she conveyed an impressive message and knowledge and stuff like that. I do think Vivek had a good night.
Mm-hmm.
I get Shireen and others don't like him. Lack of experience, Nikki Haley and others were dogpiling on him. But what that said is he's a credible threat. They all perceive him as a credible threat. And I think he, from his perspective, had a really good night.
Interesting.
I think DeSantis was one of the clear losers. Mm-hmm. I think he came across as way too cautious, looking to see what others were going to say and do. And
grumpy, just overly serious.
Yeah. And so you get those dynamics, which says that looks like DeSantis is on the decline and Vivek is on the rise.
It also felt to me like we had some disappearing candidates. I don't, it felt like to me Tim Scott.
Shocking to me because a lot of people really like Tim Scott. I think, like Senator Romney likes Tim Scott.
It's almost like he was too cordial and didn't want to interrupt.
Yeah, he's not a debater.
Felt like he wasn't on the stage. I am, of course, heartbroken to report that I think Governor Doug Burgum of North Dakota seemed way out of his depth, seemed incredibly unprepared for that level of discourse. Asa Hutchinson also kind of faded out. I got to say, I'm surprised that Chris Christie was as milquetoast as like the term that's
given his skills.
Given his skills.
Because
this
impressed. Is where he's strong. I loved that Nikki Haley talked about fiscal responsibility and pointed at the Republicans and said, we've made mistakes, we failed, and was critical of President Trump's time in office for, fiscal prudence. And
why not just President Trump,
the
Republican Party?
Yeah, and that's a hard thing to do in that race. And so I really loved that. On Ramaswamy, come on, John. Maybe he got a lot of attention, but I think people could see through it.
I think he accomplished what he wanted to accomplish, and that's why I say it was a win for him.
He's such a skilled orator.
Very skilled.
He's very good
personality.
With English language arts. That guy is very good, but he is so out of his league talking policy. And I don't know if you watched him on Meet the Press the following Sunday, but I thought that he was they quoted his book and then they quoted what he said in the debate, completely inconsistent, showing you how willing he is to just lick his finger and stick it up in the air and say what he thinks is going to be popular at the moment.
Which is certainly what we're seeing many Republicans in Iowa seem to like. Right? I think
a lot of politicians.
Unfortunately, that pattern of lying comes straight from Donald Trump. And I think The Daily had an interesting piece on Ramaswamy today and really just said, Trumpism maybe has less to do with Donald Trump and more to do with people being told exactly whatever they want to hear, even if it's a lie.
That's a great point.
I would say that politicians have been lying for...
Since the beginning.
Since the beginning and stuff. So this is not a new thing.
Yeah. Well, so Shereen, I want to take issue with you on Joe Biden being the winner because as a Republican, I saw a lot of alternatives to President Trump that I thought were so far superior. And so for me, I'm sort of like, come on, electorate, come on, see the talent, the depth of these incredible individuals. I thought there were a lot of great candidates on stage. So if they don't break through, the winner's Donald Trump.
Right. But I also have to ask, like, you know, they're asked, is climate change real? No, according to them.
Ramaswamy called it a hoax.
A hoax, right? If we're thinking about, you know, I feel like there's a real mix of really concerning, and I will grant you, I don't think Nikki Haley falls into this category, but very concerning nods to isolationism from some of those Republicans, including Ramaswamy. I think that there's a real concerning trend towards, especially, again, Ramaswamy, but also DeSantis, focusing in on issues of wokeism that, frankly, have nothing to do with what people are experiencing at their kitchen tables.
I want to hear what you have to think about Mike Pence.
Oh, we didn't talk about him, and we should have. You know, I think his time has passed. Yeah, I think his time's passed. I think there's a generational problem.
What did you think in terms of his presentation in the debate?
I thought he did a pretty nice job.
So he was...
I thought he stood up for his ideals correctly well. I just... You know, so this is not exactly what you're asking, but I hate it that you have someone of Nikki Haley's background, meaning, you know, UN, former governor, all of her skill sets, and everyone's like, oh, she'll be a great VP. It drives me bananas because with my ideal ticket right now is Nikki Haley on the top and Tim Scott as her VP running mate. Think of how twisted that is in the Republican Party. I think that would be terrific.
I don't think you can have that because they're from the same state.
They are from the same state.
Remember the issue with George Bush and Dick Cheney and he's Wyoming, not
here.
Texas?
Yeah, interesting.
They can be from the same state.
Yeah, interesting. Well, you get my point, though.
Yeah, no, I got
And, you know, everyone wants to talk about, you know, they always put the woman in the VP slot and it drives me nuts because I think Nikki Haley stands on her own.
Okay. No, I totally get that.
Yeah.
You know, I think Mike Pence, given his, you know, experiences public speaking on the radio and other things like that and his broad experience, unfortunately, I thought he came off too much as a scold. And he's got the camp that's anti-Trump that doesn't like him because he was too close with Trump. And he's got the Trump camp that doesn't like him because he didn't do what Trump wanted him to do. So he's kind of in this no-win situation.
Yeah.
And then he didn't come across as, I can stand on my own 2 feet. It came too much as...
You're getting that right. I think a
scold
is a good...
Let me lecture everybody else on the stage.
Yeah, yeah, I gotcha. Well, so what looms large is as Donald Trump in all of this. What'd you think, John, of his little game he played with Tucker Carlson and trying to have a competing event? Did it work?
I don't know. I didn't see it.
I didn't either.
It fell flat and stuff like that. I didn't hear anybody talking about that. There was a lot of...
Same here.
...talking about what took place, the booking in Georgia and all the other...
Yeah.
Dynamics with the, what is it, the judge just ruled that we're going to start the one trial March 4th, the day before Super Tuesday, which unfortunately feeds into a narrative that he's getting picked on.
Shereen, when I saw the judge do that, I was like, wow, she's willing to, you know, challenge the status quo because the thinking was that she would do something more in Trump's favor.
Delay. Yeah.
Yeah. What'd
yeah.
What'd I mean, you read into that?
Well, I think that, you know, what this could be is somebody like Donald Trump being part of the system and suffering the consequences just like most people as they enter the criminal legal system do.
Yeah. I was in Atlanta last week right before Trump did his Fulton County jail thing. But all the reporting is all about in other times he had to go to a jail. But this time he had to go to a jail and he had to smell the Fulton County jail. And I heard a journalist say, "What? Why do people bring up the smell?"
If you've not been in jails, they have a particular smell. And my understanding is that that jail in particular smells terrible.
Yeah. It's the cafeteria. It's body odor. It's whatever it is. It's heat.
Yeah.
It's not
it's sometimes
no
worse
ventilation.
Than that.
It's often worse than that.
Yeah. Okay. Interesting. Anything else you want to say about Trump, either of you, in terms of, I mean, he's got all this litany of things. He's been making so much news lately.
Yeah, well, I mean, a couple things, I guess, from my perspective. Number one, the grift continues. We see that he's making millions of dollars in fundraising off of the mugshot, you know, off of continuing to exploit.
May I interrupt there?
Yeah.
But what a mugshot. I think he landed it.
Okay.
Well, what I mean is...
He was looking for a look and he got it.
Yeah, yeah. He wanted, you know, it was basically a shame on you look. So, but keep going. I don't know if anyone agrees, but I'll bet President Trump was pretty happy with what he... came out with.
I think it's very possible. I agree with some of the Republican candidates for president who are saying that he is engaging in this campaign to stay out of jail. Mm-hmm. I think that that's possibly mm-hmm. very
true. It's his best strategy he has.
And I also think there's some interesting polling out there. And, you know, we're talking about basically, you know, Biden not being particularly popular, people not feeling excited about him. But at the same time, the general public's, the voting population's feelings about Donald Trump are broadly that he is too corrupt to serve.
We're writing history here, John.
Well, we got the dynamic right now, which is the American electorate is saying, we don't like Biden, we don't like Trump. And yet that almost looks like the train wreck we're going to have.
Yeah, that line that Biden's too old and Trump's too corrupt. Mm-hmm. It's where we find ourselves.
Right. And partly that Trump's too old as well, if you dig into those poll numbers.
Yeah.
Not quite as too old as Biden, but pretty darn close.
All right. Well, in our second segment, we have a ton of interesting things to talk about. Stay with us, everyone. Natalie Gochner in the Political Center with Shireen Gurbani and John Dougal.
You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle on KCPW. For more episodes of all our in-house podcasts, click on the Local Programs tab at kcpw.org. And while you're there, please consider donating to KCPW to support public radio in your community.
Shireen Gurbani on the left.
John Dougal. On the right.
Natalie Gochner in the Political Center, and this is Both Sides of the Aisle. All right, John and Shireen, I want to break down what's going on in the 2nd Congressional District.
Elections.
Yeah, September 5th, a special primary election. This is, of course, because of Chris Stewart stepping down. Wow, Becky Edwards leading the field. This is the former Senate candidate to take Mike Lee's spot. There's a lot of really excited people about how well she's doing. Yeah. I just say that in my little circle of, you know, my daughter's big Becky Edwards fan. And I feel like we need a woman, you know, representing us somewhere.
Yeah.
Yeah. What are you seeing here?
Wow. I would love to see Kathleen Reby in that seat.
Okay. But no, I know that time will come.
That time
and
will
you
come.
Could have two women, you know.
But yes,
that race is
great.
In November.
Which would be great. Well, yes, that's in November. A delayed race in November. But I just want listeners to know you may not get a ballot. So this is for the 2nd District. And if you live in the 2nd Congressional District, also be aware that the lines moved. I used to be in the 2nd. Now I'm in the 1st. So if you didn't receive a ballot in the mail and you're not sure if that's your district, you can go to vote.utah.gov and find out if there is a primary in your area. Early voting has started. Early voting in person has started if for some reason you didn't receive a ballot. But we know that most Utahns prefer to vote by mail. So you have time to research these candidates and see, you know, who fits for you.
I was just going to say there, it's also the municipal race going on.
And that's
so
right.
Some will get primary ballots for the municipal races. For where I live, we only have 4 candidates running for 3 seats, so we didn't get a primary ballot for those races.
I had a city council race in Murray, but look at these poll numbers. So is it 47% for Becky Edwards, 32% for Bruce Huff? Am I getting this right? 9% for Celeste Malloy?
I think that's about right, yeah.
It looks like a lot of undecided as well.
What I'm hearing is a lot of undecided. I was hearing yesterday that only 1% of voters have voted in Washington County.
Yeah.
1%.
On experience, who do you guys think is best qualified here, just on their background?
I think Celeste Malloy or
Becky
Edwards.
Celeste, given her background working back there for Congressman Stewart, I think she's got the most experience.
And yet she's at the lowest. Yeah.
She's probably the most unknown.
So I spent the weekend in Brianhead and saw, you know, had the opportunity to drive down through, was in Cedar City and then in Parowan. Signs, you know, don't vote, they say. But it was interesting to see kind of out in the most rural kind of corners of that experience, Celeste Malloy signs, which I thought was interesting.
Yeah.
But I don't think, you know, the voting population there does anything if Becky Edwards is doing really well in Davis County, Salt Lake County.
I do not know Celeste Malloy. I do know Bruce Huff. I know him to be a man of integrity, a very entrepreneurial, a great businessman, good at managing, leading organizations. But he's also put a lot of personal money into this, as has Becky Edwards. John, your comment on that. That's par for the course, right?
Par for the course. It's one of those things. If you have money, you have certain privileges when it comes to races like this, and which is perfectly fine. But that is just the reality. And somebody like Celeste, who's younger and doesn't have the deep pockets, just can't throw in personal money.
It's actually how our almost entire system works. Those who have resources are able to take greater flexibility from work, things like that, or those who are able to afford to run for office.
Yeah.
I think it creates a really uneven and unrepresentative system, but it's how it works.
Let's move from the 2nd Congressional District to our capital city and the Mayor Mendenhall Rocky Anderson race. I spent a lot of time in the city. I live in Murray, but I spent a lot of time in Salt Lake, and I just kind of look at the yard signs and It's looking about 50-50, everyone.
Yeah. Yeah, it is.
I don't know. What is the polling showing? Do we know?
I'm not sure we've had any recent polls on this, but I have to say the sentiment feels the same to me. I think mm-hmm. that there often when people, I think there's still a lot of uncertainty, mm-hmm. A lot of frustration about kind of broader economic trends, the way that things are going. Though in Utah, we're doing mm-hmm. better than many other places. I think that can spell trouble for incumbents sometimes, mm-hmm. even mm-hmm. if they're doing really wonderful work.
Mm-hmm. I don't live in the city, but I mean, with all the council members endorsing the mayor, I think from my perspective, that feeds into Rocky's narrative. They're all out of touch. They're out of tune with mm-hmm. what's going on and the problems in the city. And so that kind of feeds his narrative from my perspective.
It does. I don't think endorsements really matter in races, unfortunately. I think it's a good sign of support. But I don't think that people really go and look and say, okay, did my city council person endorse, you know, X or Y and choose to vote on that?
You know, I'm interested in not just their policies, but their tone and their style. And this is where Mayor Mendenhall really shines for me.
Yeah.
I think she can get more traction on Capitol Hill. I think she can get more traction with our congressional delegation. But she's got to lead. You know, she's got to be, assertive and be willing to lead change. But my guess is that this is going to get a bit ugly in the next couple of weeks.
Yeah.
I
think that's right.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, because I feel like both have wonderful things to offer to the city, and it would be nice to not have to have it be about beating up on each other. Mm-hmm. I will also say something that I've heard kind of publicly that I find very frustrating is commentary about Mayor Mendenhall basically doing things for the camera. Commentary about how she looks. It's kind of feeding back into the what you're hearing about Nikki Haley, that she would be a good, you know, second in command. I think that we still have some really deeply embedded sexism across our community. And I would just ask people to be thinking very seriously when they're commenting on her record or behavior, on the mayor's record or behavior, when it's based on how she looks. I'm mm-hmm. done with it.
Yeah. John and Shireen, a lot of people would say that this race is going to sort of pivot based on homelessness and responses to this really serious situation we have. I was coming over the studio today. I saw two different settings where the Salt Lake City Police, it was clear to me, were removing homeless people from a, you know, private property that they had chose to camp on. And this is a tough, long issue. We won't have a lot of time to dwell on it. But we did get some indications of the state's willingness to pilot sanctioned camping. So this is the idea that you pick up area and you provide some services and things, but you let people be outdoors. Shireen, what do you know here?
So I think this is a missing piece of the puzzle. And maybe controversially, I think there's another component of it where sometimes we have individuals who are using, not always, many of our unsheltered individuals are not clean or not using drugs at all. But we do have some that are using drugs and therefore are unwilling to go into our resource centers, right? They're not allowed in there if they're mm-hmm. going to be using actively. We don't have a place where people who want to use can go. And so we have people who end up on the streets. We also have others who are shelter resistant for other reasons. Mm-hmm. I think a campsite, a sanctioned campsite with services, meaning that there's somebody there who's trying to help people transition mm-hmm. either into shelter, maybe into a housing situation, I think is a really important piece of the puzzle. But I also think what the city is actually leading out on is trying to move as quickly as possible to add a lot of deeply affordable housing to the kind of bigger picture. And we have to have maybe both things going at the same time.
John, your reaction here. These people are our sons and daughters, our brothers and sisters, in some cases our parents. It's not humane to just turn your eye on, you know, out unsanctioned camping that under those conditions in the way that people are treated and handled. And
well, I don't think whether it's sanctioned or unsanctioned, I think what you're really referring to is whether it's safe or unsafe conditions. Mm-hmm. I mean, mm-hmm. many times mm-hmm. when folks are camped out on the street, it's very hazardous. Folks prey on them, other things like that. And so it's a very, regardless of whatever situation put them there, it's a dangerous situation mm-hmm. just that they're in. And so, you know, I don't know much about sanctioned camping, but one of the fears I have is this a way to sugarcoat and paper over a deeper problem and rather get to the root of what is causing so many folks to be homeless on the streets?
I've been spending some time on this issue. I'll throw out some observations from my side. I think the homeless resource centers are working. They're doing what they were designed to do.
Yeah.
It's just that there's so much more you have to do.
Yeah.
The real problem becomes chronic homelessness, and that's a different way. You have to treat that differently than the homeless resource centers.
Yeah.
I think that it's amazing what the state has already done. We've laid the foundation in an amazing way. We've changed homeless services governance. The state has stepped up to acknowledge that they have to, you know, accept that it's part of a state responsibility.
Yes.
We have Wayne Niederhauser, who's leading this effort, incredibly credible and knows what he's doing, and he's volunteering his time.
And in my experience, really willing to learn.
We're ready to go. We've also passed a bill that requires cities to have a no tolerance of outdoor camping, you know, providing we've got a place to put people,
right.
Which is
so,
where
so
they're
let
working.
Let me ask a question. If you're the average Utahan or the average resident of Salt Lake City walking down the streets, do you think we're making progress on this, or do you think it's just status quo?
Yeah, they think it's getting worse.
Yes.
Okay.
They think it's getting worse. And I'll tell you the data. You know, you can look at homelessness as a percent of the population. I think our number is 11% per 10,000 people. And in California, I think it's 41.
Yeah.
Just to give a sense of scale. In like in Alabama, it's like 4 per 10,000 people. And so Utah's not on the extremes. We're kind of in the middle. But it obviously needs our attention.
Yes. And to be clear, this is a growing national problem. This is not something that's happening that's unique to Salt Lake City.
No. If you go into the Denvers, the Seattles,
yes.
the Portlands, San yeah. Franciscos, the LAs, just on the West Coast, I mean,
yeah.
major issues.
And I can't let this issue...
I grew up in Portland, it's just a travesty as I go through that city.
I can't let this issue go by without acknowledging, too, the really deep impact that lack of access to mental health care has on this issue. We know that many individuals who are out on the streets have been put there because of inability to find a supportive system that allows them to deal with their behavioral health or mental health issue. And then we also know that other chronic health problems can lead individuals in doing the point in time count. I can't tell you how many people I talk to who are diabetic, who are dealing with chronic disease. Mm-hmm. So the way that our healthcare system fails also contributes to this.
Right. I'm thinking about our listeners up in Cache County and Logan area, and they've got this issue where they're facing the loss of $500,000 in Cache County because of some bookkeeping practices. John, this sounds right down your alley. I don't know, but what do you know about this? Is this worth giving a little bit of time?
So we released an audit about half a year ago in regards to some concerns about practices in the county attorney's office, which called into question some use of some federal grants that flowed through the state. And so the Utah Office of Victims of Crime went up there and did an additional diving into this issue that we had raised, identifying concerns from their perspective.
Was the money just being used incorrectly, like for the wrong things?
What our audit found is there were side contracts with governmental entities, with personal individuals, but they were using office resources to support their personal business.
Mm-hmm.
And things were being misreported in terms of some expenses and some fuzziness about what the real costs were. But because this is a federal grant that flows through the state and the state's responsible for it, and it can impact every other county, that's why the Office of Victims of Crime is very concerned, because if one county misuses those resources, then it can cause every other county and the state to lose those resources as well.
Yeah. Well, thanks for the clarification. Super interesting for our Cache County listeners.
Broader than that, though, there's interpersonal dynamics going on between various elected officials up there in Cache County,
okay.
which existed before the audit and continues to exist afterwards.
Yeah. All right. Well, very interesting. Shereen, I know that you really are beside yourself in enthusiasm about the Hoberman Arch being
back.
Wow,
I am. Okay, so the Hoberman Arch, when I was in facilities at the University of Utah, when I started there, the arch was at Rice-Eccles Stadium.
And remind us what the arch is.
Okay, so the Hoberman Arch, actually, you may have seen it in action. I definitely saw it in action. Okay, so
I saw athletes crying up there.
Yeah, tell us about it quickly.
Well, Metals Plaza is the Block 85. It's across from the Triad. It's where everyone parked when they go to jazz games, but that was where Metals Plaza was, and the Hoberman Arch was where the medals were awarded. And it was, you know, it's an incredible metal structure.
Yeah.
At the time, it was the largest, like, metal structure that opened up like that.
Not a loose crime, because they didn't give a medal for economics.
Yeah, but it's iconic. And
yeah.
So keep going.
So that arch was at the plaza and then was moved to the University of Utah, where it lived when I arrived. And then it was taken down, and it was sort of in disrepair. And there was actually quite a bit of controversy that it had sort of been dumped. Mm-hmm. And I remember the reporting that was like, people are scavenging pieces of this artwork. And now you can see it. It has been reconstructed, restored to life, and it will live at the airport. And I think it just looks fantastic. It sort of looks, I understand that it's sort of modeled both after our arches, our natural arches here, but then it also looks like the iris of an eye. And it's such a cool structure.
Where is it at the airport?
It is. You can see. Have you seen it?
It's I haven't seen it yet, but I know where it is.
Yeah, go ahead.
Well, it basically, as you drive up or as you leave, you'll see it. It's in the public right away. Okay. And it's to me, this is a statement of our living Olympic legacy, that we are an Olympic city, that we embrace the Olympic spirit, that we celebrate what we accomplished in 2002, and we also look to the future for what we can get. And I think it's June. I get June and July confused, like a lot of people, but we'll know by June, July, whether we're in the hunt for the 2034, like whether we're in basically a
2034 or maybe sooner.
Relationship with the ILC that way.
Well, go out and see it. I'm so excited that it's back.
Yeah. John?
Drive through the airport. Drive through the airport. Go
15 seconds or so. Anything you want to say about the arch?
I just remember fun memories during the Olympics, and that's
let
about my experience.
On.
It was on TV.
Yeah, let it live on.
And more public art.
Yeah. Okay, well, wonderful program with John Dougal and Shereen Gurbani. The program's produced by Anthony Scoma. Thanks, everybody, for listening.